Welcome back. Hope everyone had a nice dinner. Again, my name is Rich Bruckner, and I'm an alcoholic. I just wanted to go back before we move into steps 10, 11, and 12, and sort of Doug touched on it, and I, like everything else in AA, we've all stolen stuff along the lines. And one of the things that I love, I get to go spend some time now. This will be the third year in December. I go down to Florida and spend some time with one of my heroes, an AA hero, you know, this guy, Sandy B, that a lot of us have heard. And he goes through these ninth step promises. As Doug made us aware of the words, I just want to read these promises which we're supposed to experience. The promise is that we will experience them. At the end of this ninth step work, you know, when these amends are complete. And I want just pay attention to the verbs used. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we're halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. It's like a magic show. It's going to disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things. Well, how's that going to happen? I haven't lost it. I'm just going to lose interest like I dropped it somewhere. In selfish things, we're going to gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Where'd it go? What did I have to do with it? It just slipped away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. I mean, things are leaving, they're disappearing, they're slipping away. It doesn't sound like I have much to do with this. You know, these are spiritual verbs that we're talking about. Almost magic verbs. You know, I could use them describing a magic show. You're going to see the rabbits slip away. You know, my whole attitude's going to change and this is going to disappear. Things are going to leave me. You know, fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. How am I going to, I haven't intuitively known how to do anything. That's why I'm here. But by this point, he's saying this is some of the stuff that's happening in my life. And above all, I will suddenly realize by this point in the game, that God is doing for me what I could not do for myself. And that was really what I was experiencing, you know, buying through this ninth step and having had a spiritual experience as the result of this course of action. That's where it came from. I found what I, you know, call my higher power, buying through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and I'm not sure exactly which step and at which moment, but somewhere in there this thing happened where the undeniable truth presented itself as this wonderful power that I'm watching and almost just admiring from a third-party perspective working in and through my life. My experience with this is once that starts to happen, the way that I phrase it is a little different from Doug. But you can't stop God. And it's really just that simple. You can't stop God. And I was sitting back there thinking, listening to Doug, and he's saying what to write and what to highlight. How many of you thought or think that I might know Doug or have talked to Doug or what we were going to talk about? And Chris and I talked and, you know, put this thing together about how everybody was going to interact and who was going to cover what step and how and, you know, what we're going to talk about. I've never met Doug in my life. I've never talked to Doug prior to this. And my experience has been as I've gotten to move around this country in Alcoholics Anonymous, as he's saying what to highlight and what to underline, it's already done in my book. He's saying, write this here. And I look and, you know, oh, top of working with others. Write step 12. I wrote that. You know, do you have the same sponsor as me? And why that's important as we move into step 12, it proves time and time again that no matter where I am, I mean, a corn town in Nebraska or at the Pacific Group in Los Angeles, there's sort of a group within a group in Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, I know that our traditions say the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking, and I think that that's wonderful. Our doors swing wide. But there seems to be another group within Alcoholics Anonymous. And our book talks about this other group, and that group's called the Fellowship of the Spirit. And I recognize people immediately that belong to that Fellowship of the Spirit. I got to talk with some of you this weekend. I love that I've had a chance to get to know some of you and hear about your lives and what's happening in them and just spend that 5 minutes or 2 minutes that might change the course of direction of my life forever based on a split second with you. And I may or not even know that happened right now. But what happens in Alcoholics Anonymous, God, through you folks, can change the course of my life by a half a degree that started today here. And when you change the course a half a degree, in 10 years, I'm in a whole different place than I had if I hadn't been here today, right here, right now, with you, and maybe one of those conversations that I got to have. I didn't have to be here this weekend. I get to be here with you, you know. I didn't have to drive 6 hours. I got to drive 6 hours. That's a different way that I think about Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know how and when exactly it happened. I just know that it happened, that instead of becoming something I had to do, it's something I want to do. And like, you know, Dr. Bob talks about, you all have a book and can read, so I'm not going to go through it, but he talks about, the, you know, the one of the final reasons is this thing becomes a heck of a lot of fun. And I always like to say at the risk of offending somebody, Alcoholics Anonymous is an awful lot like having sex. If you're not having fun doing it, you're doing something wrong. And it's just gotten to be that way for me. You know, this is just a heck of a lot of fun spending time with you folks. And then and Doug starts talking and tell me about these paragraphs. Highlight this, and it's highlighted. And I look and I go, how does this happen? And in the first part of our 12th step, I'll flip to it so I don't get it wrong. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. That's what I heard all weekend from these guys, and I hear it wherever I go. These people that are involved in this Fellowship of the Spirit, they have that special sparkle in their eye. There's a lightness in their step. There's an ease and comfort. The way that they glide through life, it doesn't look like a struggle. These are the type of people I try to follow and snuggle up next to and see what they're doing. And inevitably, whether it's in that little corn town in Nebraska or out at a big group in California or wherever, they have the same paragraphs highlighted. They're talking about the same directions, and they're talking about doing them the same way. And this was just an observation I made. People disagree, but you know, I've learned that you have to stand for something in Alcoholics Anonymous or you'll fall for anything. And I happen to believe that there may be many ways to get sober. I don't think that there are many ways to do our 12 steps. If you make that decision and commitment to do our steps, there seems to be a certain rhythm and flow to going through them in the time frame that is described. You know, do this now, and it sets me up, you know, after I've done this fifth step. You know how I felt after the fifth step? Was worse than I ever felt in my whole life. You know, I mean, what that is the problem, me, in black and white and paper in front of me. You know, how can you ever possibly feel lower in your life than at that very moment? And guess what? That's why I was just so ready to say, take it all. That moment may never happen again. It set me up for a perfect introduction to giving something away I might not have been willing to give away. And at that moment, I wanted that stuff cleared up so bad that I transferred it over to that eight-step list. And then when he said, you want to get free, kid? Yes, I did after that. You know, and there's this continuity. I get a little squirrely, you know, when I hear people, and I know now that it comes out of fear. Fear that somehow this thing that has worked so wonderful in my life and given me a life, it uses the word, you know, having done this, you know, we were reborn. You know, our lives have been recreated. Recreated does not mean what I thought it meant when I got here. I thought that meant you were going to take the shipwreck of a life that I created and start putting patches on it and building it back together. You know, you were going to fix the mess I brought you. And instead you said, no, give us the mess. We're going to give you a whole new life. And thank God for that. You know, you didn't repair a broken vessel. You gave me a brand new one. So when I hear it said, you know, hey, all roads lead to China. You know, you can do these things however and whenever you want. You know, something inside of me kind of goes, oof, that's kind of scary. And it used to really bother me, you know. I was, oh my God, you're going to kill a newcomer telling them that. That's what people told me. And every time when I'd go back out and get drunk, you know, or, you know, this thing's a smorgasbord. Take what you want and leave the rest, you know. I go right to the dessert, you know, vegetable salad, anything worthwhile and wholesome. I skip it. I do the same thing with it with this program, you know, when I'm told that I can take it piecemeal or do it any old way I want. I'm one of these alcoholics that was an undisciplined creature, and I found a tremendous amount of freedom through discipline. What a weird statement that is, you know? The more disciplined my life got, the freer I became. And it tells us that, next, that this brings us to step 10. And we suggest that we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. Talking about 10 and 11, I think, unless the Spirit moves me otherwise, that this isn't going to be a very long talk, because I don't see where it tells me to do anything new. I don't see where there's any new direction here that told me to do something that I haven't previously learned how to do. It doesn't say, continue to take personal inventory, but now you can do it in your head. You no longer need to write it, Rich. You know, after you do the inventory, you no longer need to do 6, 7, 8, and 9 and make an amends and follow through as you previously learned, because you are so spiritually advanced at this point. You know, there's no new directions here to me and how this was taught to me. You guys taught me, we love talking about laying the kit of spiritual tools. You did that for me. And now this direction simply says to me, hey, dummy, we taught you a new way of living life. Keep using it. Just keep doing it. And we make new mistakes as we go along. It says that, you know, and we vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. That still happens all the time as I get a little bit freer from myself by a continued practice, you know, with working with prayer and working with meditation. Probably the best thing I can tell you about my prayer and meditation life is that I have one today. You know, that's a big statement for a guy like me. I have one. And it's something I love talking to people about after meetings. You know, hey, tell me about your prayer and meditation practice. What do you do? You know, what's that look like? I don't like, I personally was taught that other than talking about by and through these steps that I've come across a wonderful power in these rooms, I leave it at that. Who your God is and what it is and what you call it, none of my business, none of their business. And, you know, keep it to yourself in a meeting is what I was told. That stuff has no place in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's a personal venture. I was also taught that steps 1 through 9 are a we program. Have we ever heard that? Alcoholics Anonymous is a we program. He said steps 1 through 9 are a we program. Steps 10, 11, and 12, you're on your own, kid. What you choose to make out of 10, 11, and 12, that's up to you. That's that stuff that separates the ground beef sobriety from the filet mignon. You know, how free do you want to be? What do you want your life to look like? He's not calling a check and seeing if I'm really on my knees when I said I was. Am I really doing, 20, 30 minutes of sitting meditation? Am I really looking into spiritual books? Am I pursuing spiritual places? Am I being quick to see where religious people are right? You know, where is this seeking taking me? Am I enthusiastic about it, or am I approaching it as something I have to do? You know, I'm not reporting to anybody on that other than to the ultimate reality deep down inside. When my lights go off at night, you're not there, but I'm there and God's there. And that's what this has been. This spiritual journey has largely been an individual one, unless somebody cares to talk about it and asks, you know, in my living room or outside. And that journey for me has been getting rid of me a little bit at a time. And I wish I could stand here. You know, I've just begun this thing. You guys know that as well as I. And that's the excitement to this. Another neat thing, I would tell you, man, I would love to be 15 years sober. You know, I want what Doug's got. And I do. But I don't want the 15 years right now. I've learned to be real happy. You know, I would have traded my life for anybody in this room when I got here. And I'm not so willing to do that today. I'm pretty content with my life. I enjoyed it. Man, what's happening in these first 5 years? I don't want to miss what's going to happen in year six. You're not cheating me out of that. You know, all I know is it's going to be awesome. I don't want to miss 7 and 8 or 9 or 10, you know, to trade my life for the guy with 30 years. Because the other thing I'm figuring out, I'm 36 years old now. You know, I came in here just about turning 31. With each of these years of sobriety, I also seem to get a year older. And I haven't figured the trick out on how we can, you know, gain this the spiritual wisdom, insight, you know, the gain, effectiveness, grow in understanding, all of that stuff without getting any older. I think that's just part of the deal. So I'm not in a big hurry today. And that's a big deal for me because I'd have traded it in a heartbeat for anybody's. And that's not to say your lives don't look appealing to me. I hope everybody feels the same way about your recovery that I do. I think I had the worst bottom in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know why? Because it was mine. And I think I have the greatest recovery in Alcoholics Anonymous because it's mine. And I hope each of you feel the same way, that you had the worst bottom in AA and the best recovery. You know, is there a better feeling than that? And now with this stuff, as I review, I have a hard time separating 10 and 11 because to me the instructions for 10, you know, and how I'm doing this review are those questions that Doug talked about. I typed out those questions. I was talking to Scott at the break, and as I said, I've never met Doug in my life. And it turns out a lot of his practice is exactly the same thing I've been taught and all these other people all over the place. So there seems to be certain things that happy, successful members of Alcoholics Anonymous do to the best of my recognition, you know. And when you're happy, I want to ask you, what do you do? And inevitably, I get the same answer. That's my survey. I can report back, which is sort of my job, you know, in doing this in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm just like a reporter. My one sponsor calls it the greatest show and tell on earth. You know, I conduct a spiritual experiment where I go out and try this stuff that the book and, you know, you folks suggest, and I report back to you on how it's working in my life. And then somebody out there that's thinking this God stuff's stupid, you know, goes, well, that doesn't sound too bad. You know, he's not getting locked up anymore. You know, he's got a driver's license that matches the name on his registration on the car. And, you know, and I used to call that the trifecta. You know, if you had an insurance card, a registration card, and a driver's license, all with the same name in the same state, I mean, you had a better shot at hitting the lottery than getting that trifecta going. But where this stuff goes and the ego, in reviewing my day, things that didn't used to be objectionable, I'm starting to find objectionable. And one of the most recent ones that I want to tell on myself, there was this guy around the D.C. area that a story was told about how humble this guy was, because true humility is the ability to laugh at your defects that we discover in 6 and 7. Because if I can't laugh at these defects, if I'm feeling guilt or shame over them, what does that imply? It implies that I think there's something that I can be doing about them. You know, I could be changing, but I'm not. This defect keeps popping up. But when I realize and acknowledge it, you know, take it into prayer and meditation and realize what's going on here, there's really no reason for guilt or shame. And this guy, Hal Marley, was really good at this. And Hal used to run 5 miles a day. And the guy telling this story was a guy named Keith. And he said, you know, we're sitting at lunch, and Hal's telling me that he went out for his morning run, and he's sitting there, and he goes, listen how goofy I am. And the guy's like 30 years sober at this point. I finish my run, and there's a guy on the corner, my neighbor, he's got polio. He's got the arm crutches, you know, where you have to pull your feet along. He can't run 5 feet, nonetheless 5 miles. He would love to be able to just run 5 feet. And I finish my morning run, and I come around the corner, my neighbor goes, good morning, Hal. Did you just do your morning run? And I told him, yeah, I just ran 6 miles. I don't know if anybody, if that resonates with anybody, all 610 of you. I have a tendency to embellish, not just in good jest like that. Sometimes when I do it, what it is that somewhere deep down inside, I'm not good enough who I am and what I am. And I was 2 years sober, and I ran into this guy that I saw from one of my first dips into Alcoholics Anonymous in 1991, and he recognized me. And this guy's name was Rob, and Rob was sober about 11 years, and Rob was a sober man of integrity, and I respected him, and I wanted him to like me. And he came up to me, and he goes, my God, Rich, it's so good to see you. And I'm in Baltimore about 3 hours from home, and I said, man, I'm just so happy to see this guy. I haven't seen you since 1991. My gosh, you must be sober for 15 years now. How is your life going? I said, oh, I'm living at the beach, and I diverted the conversation at the beach, you know, and I'm living down there. I got this home group, and I never stopped the conversation and said, Rob, I'm not 15 years sober. I have 2 years sober. You know what? And those were the greatest 2 years of my life. I told you what was going on at 2 years sober. I had a lot to be proud of that God had done for me. And instead of acknowledging it and accepting it, I want it to be more and better for this guy. Because God only knows that somewhere deep down inside, you might not like me. You might not accept me. And this became objectionable to me. And of all of those men traveling all over the place, when I would see this guy, how I create the bondage of self, a stupid little situation like that. I started seeing Rob every 2 or 3 months. He would show up at the beach with his wife, you know, and he'd come to my home group, and my God, I hope he doesn't see anybody in my home group. You know, hey, I've known Rich 15 years. He's been sober, and my whole home group would know I've been sober too. So I'd sit there terrified, you know. And then, do you want to go to dinner, you know, with me and my wife? Why don't you and Allison? She's my girlfriend in AA. And no, I better get home. I don't, you know, because God forbid his wife and my girlfriend talk. You know, oh, where'd you meet Rich? Oh, wasn't him in AA when he got sober 2 years ago. You know, the gig would be up, you know, and I'm maneuvering my life. I don't know if this makes sense to anybody, you know, anybody who ever pulled anything like this. And this is a very, very, you know, a benign little lie that is now affecting my life on so many different levels. And this didn't pop up until 10th and 11th, writing that stuff down at night. It started to bother me that I'm ducking and jiving Rob. And this is a guy, you know, I've turned myself in 3 different states. And this is the scariest thing I've ever done, is to pick up a telephone, which I finally did. I prayed all night. I didn't sleep. I was up a half sick. You know, and I said, Rob, do you have 5 or 10 minutes that you can really listen to me? I know you're at work. We can talk later if we have to. He said, I got it. What's up? And I said, I need to ask you for your forgiveness for something. And if this affects our friendship, I would certainly understand that because I've been lying to you. And I kept the lie going by omission. And when you came up to me, you know, back then and said, you know, I haven't seen you since 1991. You must be sober 15 years. And how's your life? And I just started saying, living at the beach and blah, 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 you know, and never really answered the question. I didn't have the courage to stop. I thought it wasn't good enough who and what I was. And that's a real problem in my life. I see it repeating myself. I'm inclined to exaggerate and lie about things that don't need to be exaggerated or lied about. Is that guy, you know, with the polio going to be one bit more impressed that I ran 6 miles instead of 5? No. You know, I don't know why Hal had to do that, but I do know why Hal needed to do that. And that was at 30 years sober. And he's telling the guy he sponsors this story at lunch. That's the beauty of it. And he's going, you wouldn't believe what I did today. You know, isn't this nuts? And I've got guys in my life that I get to have conversations like that. I don't know that I'm interested in becoming a perfect being or anything like that, but I'm interested in striving towards perfection. All of a sudden, somewhere along the line, Bill starts to change the language of things, especially in that 12 and 12 where he starts to talk about striving towards perfection, you know, and the road starts to narrow. What road? My road, you know, my road. These things that are becoming objectionable to me in my evening review as my 10th and 11th step practice continues. And in that, I've actually developed a set of standards that came out of their ideals. It's not just sex. My sponsor had me do he extracted these ideals through this fourth and fifth step process where I would say, you know, I hate this guy because, you know, he was grabbing girls' rear ends in the bar and he just really degrades women and he's just a real jerk and I want to knock him in the face. And he'll go, wow, it sounds like you have some type of idea inside you that women are to be treated with dignity and respect. Like, yeah, I think that's right. Why don't you write that down? And I have this sheet of paper. We started off with the man I was is that fourth and the fifth step. And I have another sheet of paper that's the man I want to be. And that provides, and it's all these standards by which I strive to live, you know, of what a man of integrity looks like in my eyes, not yours. Yours might look way different than mine. You might look at my list of what a man of integrity is and goes, you know, that guy's an idiot. But I'm the one that has to live by this, you know. And being fearless, honest, thorough with me is what this deal becomes all about. And this list developed. And at night I get to look at this thing when I do those questions, you know, and go, I found out I didn't know this. You know, I thought I wanted to be a tough guy, so you were kind of scared of me and gave me space and looked up to me like, oh, my God, we better be nice because he might hurt me. And it turns out that I want you to like me and to be a part of my life because I'm a kind, loving person. You know, so I get to go at the end of the day, was I a kind, loving person today? That's my standard, you know. Did I treat women with dignity and respect today? And the standard that I'd been holding all these other people to, it turns out I hold you to a standard that I don't live by. You know, I'm not always treating Allison the way that I want me to treat her. And that to me is what this review is for each day, so that I get a new shot the next day. And he told me that if these ideals and standards aren't on paper, that there's something special about these being on paper. He said if they're not on paper, they don't exist. It's just in your idea. It's a thought. And this turns out to be a skill that, like, all successful people do. Any type of goal or anything like that, it's on paper. It's just it's not an AA thing, turns out. Most of your ideas aren't. But when I have a standard and it's on paper, and I'm working with this practice of taking what pops up at the end of the day into prayer, into meditation, and I'm taking... When you get doing this, those questions, I Xeroxed, you know, 100 of them because I'm lazy and I keep them on a little clipboard and I keep them next to the bed, you know, and that night I answer the questions. And it probably doesn't take 5-10 minutes. Sometimes maybe if I had a really wacky interaction that day with somebody at work, it could be a little longer. And then I know, and then if I'm still thinking about it the next morning, that's one, you know, I'll usually call the sponsor, you know. As we ran this by the person, you know, hey, I got this thing going on that's bothering me. He goes, did you write about it? Did you run columns on it? That's how my, did you run your columns? Well, call me back once you've done that. And he's not real interested in hearing my problems until I've done my part, which is this skill that you've already taught me. That's the other part of the 10th step. It's also a part of the 12th step, you know, practicing these principles. You guys taught me the principles and extract it from deep within me, how my principles conform with those in the book and how I want to be living. And a much more significant demonstration of these principles lies in our feet than in our mouths. You all taught me that. He said, we all carry the AA message, and when absolutely necessary, we use our mouth. You know, and that's what you all asked me to do this weekend, was to use my mouth. You know, I ask Allison what my feet are doing every day in my home, occupation, and affairs. And I think he listed them that way. I mean, Bill was such a wordsmith. He didn't really put much in there by chance. And the order of things, I mean, how these worked out in our home, occupation, and affairs. I don't know about you, but that's the order of how hard these things are, where these principles are the most difficult to practice. You know, especially, you know, if you have an AA relationship, you know, which you learn new ways of communicating. You have AA arguments. She just celebrated 17 years, and I'll say, honey, you know, could you put that cap back on the toothpaste? It's really hard for me to scrub dry toothpaste, you know, out of the sink once it dries. If you just put that cap on, I think it wouldn't happen. Really? Why does that bother you so much, Rich? Maybe you need to write about this and call your sponsor. It's just the toothpaste, honey. I'm not writing about the toothpaste. You know, at game on, you know, that's the spiritual giant you're looking at. We can get in it over the cap of toothpaste, and I could stand here and tell you the reality of my life. Without, I don't want to live, you know, in the shame or the hidden secrets of pretending I'm perfect because I get to stand behind a podium for an hour. You know, anybody can do that. My 11-step practice, you know, like I said, it's become exciting to me somewhere along the line of learning as much as I can about as much as I can. And I talked with a gal during one of the breaks. And if you ask me, you know, what are some of my beliefs, I'll usually say in a beginning conversation, well, what are yours? You know, I believe what you believe. I actually had a wonderful, one of the most spiritual men of my life, took me through the basic texts of just about every major theology that there is out there. And I can show you our 12 steps in the Quran. I could show them to you in the Bible. I could show them to you in the Bhagavad Gita. I could, you know, if you believe it, I believe it, because I know where these principles are in there. And I've found something to draw from a lot of different things, you know, and that's just me. And this is a guy that, I mean, I'm more than bristled with antagonism. Are you kidding me? At the mention of religion. And now somehow I think that they all have got something for a guy like me. I mean, it's not easy. You know, I like that the knee thing that Doug was talking about. It's similar to when you're on your knees, you're halfway to your feet. You know, who knows what up and down is. That was the greatest, going down to my knees. I was up for the first time in my life. And it turns out that these 12 steps, we always see pictures of them, you know, as 12 steps. He said, these aren't 12 steps up. These are 12 steps down towards humility. That's a good visualization for a guy like me. And having had this spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, I try to carry this message as close to the book as I can. Am I perfect? No. Why do I do that? Because my ego wants to think that maybe, just maybe, since 1935, we've had some group experience, that maybe we've learned some stuff, you know? Maybe we've grown, you know? And there's kind of that loophole that the non-big book people, you know, when they're looking to give you the other argument, they say, well, it says we only know but a little. You know, this book is meant to be suggestive only. You know, it says that on a parachute too, you know, pull the cord, suggestive only. But, you know, I'll hear something that I can't reconcile with this book. And every now and then they sound good. And I'm tempted to offer that to the new guy. It's not what I was offered. I'm tempted to offer him a new suggestion that I think might work. And I have enough people around me. I told you the story about getting jumped to my sponsor, you know, where they report back and we're a part of each other's lives, where they could say, you know, you're getting off the page with these guys, and to help me become a better sponsor. Chris is going to talk more, but he's taught me so much about this 12th step and how to be a working with others sponsor and what the job is. And it's as outlined as good in working with others as any of the other directions in our book. It tells us what to do on that first visit. It tells us what to do on the second visit. And, I mean, very specific stuff. And I wasn't doing some of it until he didn't even realize he was pulling me up on something, but it was. And namely, it was, you know, at the end of the first visit, handing the guy the book and see if he's interested and saying, you know, take a read and come back if you want. If this plan looks like something you want to do, and then I'll guide you through it. I like what he said about, Doug mentioned, a textbook. I looked that up, you know, and a textbook is a tool used for teaching and learning, which implies two things. There needs to be a teacher and there needs to be a learner. You know, guess which one you are, Rich? Oh, okay, I'm the learner. And somewhere the learner becomes the teacher when that next, you know, little knucklehead comes along and my pathetic life looks a little better than their pathetic life. You know, I think that's the qualifications for sponsor. And then you become, and then all of a sudden you become in the middle of AA, like that dot in the middle of the triangle. I envision a train. When I'm the caboose, you know, if those tracks get bumpy or they're going around a sharp turn and something busts loose, it's going to be the caboose, and the rest of the train's going to go. But when that next little car lodges in and back of me, and that next guy takes this message to that next guy, and there's two cars in, I'm locked in there, baby. I got nowhere to go. I'm following you guys, and they're following me, and we're right in there. And I always start off with in working with others, with that first line in how it works, and telling what was told to me by my first sponsor, Jim. He says, Richard says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. So you know what that should say, Rich? Rarely have we seen a person who has thoroughly followed our path. You know? Rarely have we seen a person fail who's thoroughly followed the path. But rarely have we seen a person who's thoroughly followed our path. It just doesn't happen often. So it's not that the deal doesn't work. There's a lot of people desperately looking for this message, a message of depth and weight, and looking for somebody, you know, that I think when I got to the point that I became truly grateful for this life that you've given me and became fascinated with this stuff, I wanted to learn all kinds of stuff. I wanted to learn, where did it come from? What is the history of Alcoholics Anonymous? And, you know, guys like Bill and a guy like Jay out in California, there's these guys that do these history presentations, and I couldn't get enough of it. You know, and that's something important to pass on. I think it's wonderful to know where we came from, you know, and how this thing started and how we keep it going. I became very interested in this spiritual adventure that you guys call Steps 10, 11, and 12, you know, growing and understanding and effectiveness, a lifetime job. And all I could tell you is I feel so lucky to have been a part of this weekend with you folks. I'm going to walk away from here a better man. You know, I've learned some stuff this weekend. And every time I say yes to Alcoholics Anonymous, that happens. That seems to be the only yes. And not to think about it. If I can do it, I'm there. And on that note, I hope that your spiritual journey is as fun and adventurous. You know, this isn't some glum deal of hanging out in churches, people beating me with noodles and telling me when out of. I mean, that's not what mine looks like. If that's the journey you've chosen, God bless you. And, you know, may God bless you and keep you until then, as our book concludes. That's all I've got, and thank you so much.